For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is Tommy Orange, author of the New York Times best-selling novel There, There, and one of the headlining authors of this year's Git Lit Festival here in Spokane. There, There has won numerous awards since its publication last year, including the 2018 National Book Critics Circle Awards John Leonard Prize for First Book by a New Voice, and the 2019 Hemingway Foundation Pen Award for Debut Novel. Tommy Orange was born and raised in Oakland, California, where his novel is set, and is an enrolled member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. He's a graduate of and now teaches at the Institute of American Indian Arts MFA program in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and lives with his wife and son in Angels Camp, California. Tommy Orange, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the book itself first. I want to start with the structure of it because it's really unique. And each chapter changes character perspective, which to me seems like you really set yourself a challenge as a writer to kind of convince the reader each time they turn to a new chapter to really buy into and empathize with a new character. So can you talk about that challenge from a writing perspective? Like, how did you sort of get the reader into each character?
I think I wanted, this was the book that I wanted to write structurally from the get-go. It wasn't like I thought that I wanted to write like an urban native Oakland novel and how will I do it. It was falling in love with what novels can do and then trying to figure out what's the most interesting structure to do that within before I kind of came up with the concept for what I would write. I mean, I knew I was going to write a native story because that's where I come from, and an Oakland one because I wanted to represent Oakland. I feel it's been underrepresented in literature, and there's like crazy overexposure on the New York novel. But I knew I wanted to write from a bunch of different perspectives and figure out how their lives converge. And there were a few books that made me want to do that, particularly Colin McCann's Let the Great World Spin. Yeah. His book structure sort of is the inverse of mine. So you get a prologue at the beginning where the main event of a guy walking across the two twin towers on a tightrope. But you find out after that seven-page beautiful prologue how all the characters relate to that central sort of image. And so mine works the opposite. You're sort of finding out in the end how they all connect. So reading a book like that, I just really loved the experience of that structure and wanted to try to do something like it. I knew that the challenge was just writing a book at all. You know, trying at art is scary and a little stupid, especially if you're naturally self-loathing. I certainly didn't think of it as a challenge, particularly structure-wise. It was something that I really wanted to do because it's more out of passion for literature and a particular type of literature.
And it's interesting you talk about that other book that sort of starts with the event and then expands out, because you have to build this trust with your reader through the strength of your characters to sort of get them through basically the first half of the book, which is a new character every single chapter. We don't return to another character again until about halfway through, and we're not really sure what we're heading towards until about halfway through the novel when we start to learn about the big Oakland powwow. So did you struggle with, you know, novel drive in terms of getting your plot moving in that way?
You know, I know a lot of readers don't like going from chapter to chapter and changing characters and sort of losing sight of investment, but I do like that experience. But I did try to earn, as you transition from chapter to chapter, I did try to earn some sense of reader magnetism or something, like compellability. Like, so you go from Tony, who frames the powwow, the first chapter, you find out that he's possibly going to be involved with robbing a powwow, just right. As a basic premise. And then we move to Dean Oxendine, who also frames it in the sense that we're capturing Oakland stories. Hmm. And then we move to Opal, the Opal chapter back in time, and it's almost as if this is one of the stories. So it does have a thread that is, it's not totally obvious, but it's also not like you're jumping to, you know, Thailand all of a sudden.
Right.
You're a white businessman. Like, there is some reason to believe that the author is going somewhere. I tried to earn that, at least.
My guest today is Tommy Orange, author of the New York Times best-selling novel, There, There, and one of the headlining authors of this year's Get Lit Festival here in Spokane. So a lot of this book deals with Native identity and with Oakland, and several of the characters struggle with not feeling Indian enough or not learning about their Native heritage from their family. So what was your own connection to being Native American growing up, and how did you work that into your characters?
So yeah, so my dad is from Oklahoma. He's a fluent Cheyenne speaker, and his background is being raised by his great-grandparents and a little more of a traditional, what you would think of as a traditional Native upbringing. And then my mom's white, and we go three generations back in Oakland. So I very much had a biracial experience in that both sides were informing who I was, and I never felt entirely enough like either side. So, you know, we'd go back to Oklahoma to visit relatives, and it was always very clear from the get-go that I am Native. I think all Native people struggle with what it means to be authentically Native, because mm-hmm. it's been used as a tool for erasure to have there only be one way and to have this blood quantum come into play. And so it's just complex and nuanced, and I wanted to explore in a prismatic way all the different ways that people experience their Native identity and do it through these characters who, like I said, came from thin air and are fictional characters, but very much informed by various different kinds of experience I had working in Oakland and growing up in Oakland.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about Oakland because it plays such a big role in the book. And the title of your book comes from Gertrude Stein. And I wanted to just read a little section from your book. This is your character, Dean Oxendine, describing that, quote, sort of a little meta moment. Dean wants to tell him he'd looked up the quote in its original context in Gertrude Stein's Everybody's Autobiography and found that she was talking about how the place where she'd grown up in Oakland had changed so much, that so much development had happened there, and that the there of her childhood, the there was gone. There was no there anymore. Dean wants to tell him it's what happened to Native people. He wants to explain that they're not the same, that Dean is Native, born and raised in Oakland, from Oakland. So I read in a previous interview that you said you sort of left Oakland partially because of being pushed out by rising cost of living. So do you feel like the there of your Oakland is also gone or disappearing?
No, but it certainly has transformed quite a bit. I mean, there are ways that Oakland has absolutely remained the same, and you know, it's rough edges and its beauty are still there in the ways that I recognize. But it certainly has changed, and there's a ton of money and new faces and new businesses that don't seem like Oakland. But we're looking for to buy a house now. The success of the book has allowed us the possibility to move back, which is kind of a cool thing to write a book about Oakland and then have it be successful enough to be able to move back to Oakland. Mm. And we want our son to experience an Oakland that is still very cool. It's a cool place to live. But it was a dark time when we felt sort of exiled from Oakland and moved in with her parents temporarily. It was certainly a dark time that I just wrote a short story about, actually. But the Gertrude Stein quote, I found that before all that happened, and it more stood out to me as mirroring Native experience and the ways in which we relate to environment and the way these characters think of home and how to make that feel true to being Native when being Native is supposed to be about reservations in the land, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
So speaking of that sort of broader Native experience, another unique feature of this novel is the prologue and the interlude, which are essentially nonfiction essays which place the fictional events of the book within a broader historical and cultural context. So I just wanted to sort of get a little bit of the sound of the voice of either the prologue or the interlude. So would you be willing to read just a page or two from one or the other?
Sure. There's a part of the prologue that came out the first year of writing the book, and I think is would make sense to read here because it's the end of the prologue. It's called Urbanity. Urban Indians were the generation born in the city. We've been moving for a long time, but the land moves with you like memory. An urban Indian belongs to the city, and cities belong to the earth. Everything here is formed in relation to every other living and non-living thing from the earth. All our relations. The process that brings anything to its current form, chemical, synthetic, technological, or otherwise, doesn't make the product not a product of the living earth. Buildings, freeways, cars, are these not of the earth? Were they shipped in from Mars? The moon? Is it because they're processed, manufactured, or that we handle them? Are we so different? Were we at one time not something else entirely? Homo sapiens, single-celled organisms, space dust, unidentifiable, pre-bang quantum theory? Cities form in the same way as galaxies. Urban Indians feel at home walking in the shadow of a downtown building. We came to know the downtown Oakland skyline better than we did any sacred mountain range, the redwoods in the Oakland hills better than any other deep wild forest. We know the sound of the freeway better than we do rivers, the howl of distant trains better than wolf howls. We know the smell of gas and freshly wet concrete and burned rubber better than we do the smell of cedar or sage or even fry bread, which isn't traditional, like reservations aren't traditional, but nothing is original. Everything comes from something that came before, which was once nothing. Everything is new and doomed. We ride buses, trains, and cars across over and under concrete plains. Being Indian has never been about returning to the land. The land is everywhere or nowhere.
That was my guest, Tommy Orange, reading from his book, There, There. And that was from the prologue. I was really struck by just sort of the authoritative tone in the prologue and the interlude. It's this big, like, we voice. So where does that voice come from and that sense of just confidence as a young writer sort of setting out to tell, you know, a really big story?
That's the first time I've ever heard anyone use the term confidence to describe the tone and the voice in that. I mean, everyone's sort of called it my nonfiction essay part now, but I wrote it with more like a Greek chorus, like with from the we perspective, like mm-hmm. you said, which a lot of people don't even notice that it's we. I don't know that I would have called it confident or with authority at any moment writing it, and I certainly don't write from that place ever. What I wanted to do was to write from a perspective that brings up history as other Native people see it, and expecting that other Native people would be reading it if it ever became a book, I wanted to write with enough strength, power, and beauty that a Native person who kind of knows a lot of the darker sides of American history, just because we feel it in a different way, and the people that raise us tell us different stories than the American education system. Mm. So I wanted to write it in such a way that another Native person would get something from it, and also to kind of like set out to talk about urban Indians, which I hadn't read in literature before, sort of defining what urban Native people are, and sort of needing to go back to contextualize how we ended up in cities, needing to go back all the way to the beginning of the country felt at some point inevitable.
So returning back to sort of the fictional part of the book, I don't want to give away too much about the climactic event of the book, which happens at the big Oakland powwow in the final third or quarter of the book. But things get pretty dramatic there at the end. And in a novel with so many different perspectives, as I was reading it, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a challenge to sort of wrap up all of these storylines. So can you talk about how you address that challenge of bringing everything together at the end?
Well, first, I avoided it for a long time because I knew how much was depending on it. It was sort of like those final cards on a house of cards. I set up this idea of many chapters in the interlude. So sort of teaching the reader how to read your book is one of the things that I had in mind. It was one of the phrases that I learned in school, I think specifically from Pam Houston. So I think, you know, by the time you get to the end, you're kind of ready for these different structural things to happen. So you have the many chapters that kind of catches you up with the characters after the interlude, nonfiction-y part. You get these many chapters. And so after you get the next set of characters, you're getting more mini chapters that actually include everyone from the book. So while catching you up to everyone's narrative, I'm also kind of moving fast to get everyone to the action. And the quickness of the chapters, I didn't totally know this at the time, but I think is part of what leads to this climactic, quick-paced, cinematic ending. And luckily, people seem to feel that I pulled it off. So, with novels, I think it's in the name, right? I think we should be doing experimental things with novels. I think the publishing world is getting way more diverse now. And I think even structurally, there are a lot of changes that are happening. But for a while there, there was a lot of convention. And I think what I always loved about novels is how much they can do whatever they want if you pull it off. And also how they can represent contemporary times. A lot of people say don't write references to pop stuff in there because you want people to read you in 100 years. And I'm like, I don't care what anybody's reading when I'm dead in 100 years. I really, it's not what I'm bringing to the page. And not what I like as a reader. I like books to feel like the time they're in.
My guest has been Tommy Orange, author of the best-selling novel There, There. He'll be in Spokane this month for the Get Lit Festival, reading on Wednesday, April 24th, 7 p.m. at Spokane Community College, and on Thursday, April 25th at Pie and Whiskey at the Washington Cracker Company building in Spokane. Full festival details are at gitlitfestival.org. And Tommy Orange, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you.